I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. I am so delighted today on the broadcast, the podcast. You all know I'm still used to saying broadcast, even though it's been months since the podcast started. But I'm delighted to have Marilyn Gardner with me on Faith Conversations. And I'm going to introduce her in just a moment. But I just want to remind you that if you have questions, as you hear the podcast each week, sometimes questions might arise. You can always go to AnitaLustria.com, and right there on the homepage, I talk all about the current week's podcast, and I'll give you the website or the blog address for my current guest and any information if my guest happens to be an author or have a book. That will all be right there on the homepage. So if you're wondering about more information about my guest, you can always head to AnitaLustria.com and you can find it there. And also, if you have suggestions for me about future guests or questions or comments, I would love to hear from you. And on the homepage, on the menu bar, there is a contact tab. Just click on that and you can write me an email and tell me what you're thinking, what you're appreciating, what's driving you crazy, whatever it is about the podcast. Let me know there. And if you're having trouble finding that, the email address is faithconvo, faith, C-O-N-V-O, that's short for conversation, faithconvo@gmail.com. And I hope to hear from you. Some of you, if you've just found the podcast, might have found it through the Facebook page Friends of Midday. And welcome. I'm glad that you've found it. And just a word to let you know that I don't have any marketing money, and so you are my best marketers. So I encourage you, and in fact, I would humbly ask you to every Monday share the information about the podcast on your Facebook page and let others know about it. Would really appreciate that. And if you're unaware, I'm currently the Director of Alumni and Church Relations at Northern Seminary, and I also have a media training business. And again, you can find out all about that at AnitaLustria.com. Well, let's get down to business. I'm, as I said already, delighted to have Marilyn Gardner with me. Marilyn is the wife, actually, of a friend of mine, Cliff Gardner. Cliff and I went to school. We graduated together at Moody Bible Institute way back in the early 80s. And Cliff graduated from Moody and eventually met Marilyn. They married, and they have five kids birthed on three continents, which I think is amazing. But you'll know why when you hear that Marilyn is an adult third culture kid who grew up in Pakistan, has lived in Pakistan and Egypt, and then the rest is history. Her five kids on three continents, which were raised in Pakistan and Egypt, before moving back here to the United States. And currently she lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Marilyn, in fact, is the author of a book, which you can find out more about on the homepage at AnitaLustria.com. But let me tell you, the name of the book is Between Worlds, Essays on Culture and Belonging. And we're going to talk about some interesting things today because Marilyn has worked with refugees. Marilyn it has a compassionate heart, and you're going to learn that and see that. And she has a lot of firsthand information from her work in Turkey, Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan, and who knows where else she's going to tell us about today. So Marilyn, welcome to Faith Conversations.
Thank you so much, Anita. It's really, I'm honored to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. And just to give folks a little background, which even I think tells about how God sort of created you to be who you are. Part of that is the fact that you did grow up a third culture kid. Your parents were missionaries, and you spent a lot of time outside the United States. And so tell us a little bit about your growing up, and then we'll get into some of your more recent activities.
Great. Yeah, so I grew up in the country of Pakistan. I was 3 months old when my parents took me. They had already established a home there with three older brothers. They actually lived in the southern part of Pakistan while I went to boarding school at the age of six. I'm sure some of your listeners will. Yeah.
So I went to boarding school, but I was 15. That's a far cry from six.
Right. But you know what? 15's hard too.
Well.
But so at 6 years old, I went to boarding school in the north, but my parents lived in the south. So my earliest memories were of Pakistan. I didn't have any memories of the United States at all. until I turned about 5 years old. And that was a furlough. My parents were actually missionaries. So an adult third culture kid as well as an MK is what I call myself.
Okay.
So grew up in Pakistan. And when I graduated from high school, I knew I wanted to become a nurse. And that is because I just never imagined actually living in the United States.
Huh.
And I felt like nursing is a way to get back overseas. So, which sounds so not noble.
It depends on how not noble it sounds. It depends on why you wanted to be working and living overseas. It kind of sounds noble to me, really.
So, thank you. That actually makes me feel much better. So, You're absolutely right, though. I was very affected by this women's and children's hospital in the area where my parents lived. It was born of the need of women and children in the area to bring good health care to them. Mm-hmm. I volunteered at that hospital when I was 16 years old, 16 and 17, turning 18. Every winter break. So we had winter breaks from boarding school and I would volunteer there. Hmm. And that really is where I had the heart. And I felt like this is something I really love. And I will say, I absolutely love being a nurse.
Very impressionable age to be volunteering. And you know, it's just kind of, it's exciting to hear how God does direct our steps and put those experiences in front of us that really do mold and shape us in ways that we don't even anticipate in our youth until we sometimes get to adulthood or we don't see the fuller picture.
You know, that's so true. And actually, when I think about nursing, I'm not sure if I chose it or it chose me.
Yeah.
But no matter, the dots connected. I became a nurse. And really, very soon after becoming a nurse, I did head straight to Pakistan. I thought partly it was that, what do you do when you graduate and you're not quite sure what you want to do in life, but you know you need to go home. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. The difference for me is that home was thousands of miles away
right.
in Pakistan. And that is really formational in my faith journey, because what actually happened was 3 months after being in Pakistan working as a nurse, I was actually deported. Right. So that, which is so interesting, because that's a part of the story.
Well, and I was going to ask actually at the beginning, the political climate when you were small as opposed to once you had grown up, and I'm sure there were shifts over time.
Definitely shifts. But if you look back at things that were written, my mom actually wrote a book, and if you look back at her book, there was always this tension. You know, Pakistan was really birthed in a lot of conflict, in separating from India. Pakistan itself means land of the pure, and it was created to be this Muslim state, and so it was really birthed in a lot of conflict and a lot of violence. And my parents moved there very close to the time where Pakistan had just become a nation.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
Right. So even though definitely the climate has changed and definitely there is a much more serious problem with fundamentalist Muslims, mm-hmm. and problems around that every time you turn around practically, it was not easy necessarily when my parents were there either. There was a constant need to build bridges, which actually they did really well, and they taught us well.
Hmm. How many years were your parents there in Pakistan?
My parents were there 35 years.
Wow. Wow. I mean, they gave their lives in service, in ministry in that place, didn't they?
They really did, and they modeled it really well. They absolutely loved Pakistan, and they taught us to as well. The hardest spanking I ever got was actually I stuck my tongue out at some Pakistanis, and my parents would have none of it. It was, we were guests in this country, and they needed me to know that. And I actually think back on that as such a good lesson. I was not harmed in any way. I only grew through that experience because it was so important to just to show me in a way how important it was, their love for Pakistanis, how important it was, and how important it was that I respect the country that had taken me in as a guest.
Now, maybe this will get us off track, but what I want to say is I think a bunch of Americans need a spanking as well with the way they act in some foreign countries. I don't think we're always the best guests when we go abroad.
I think you are so right. When I think about that life lesson, it has stood me so well as I've traveled to other countries and as I've been taken in and offered this amazing hospitality.
Or I think sometimes there can be an arrogance to us. You know, we are a, quote, superpower, and sometimes we can think too highly of ourselves and not be in a posture of learning when we travel. And there is so much to learn from our fellow citizens all around the world.
Wow, I absolutely love that. One of the things we call that in healthcare is cultural humility.
Ah, okay.
It's this posture of learning. It's a lifelong commitment to learning, a lifelong commitment to self-evaluation. And this is in my non-Christian world of healthcare that I work in. And yet how applicable when I think of who we are as followers of Christ and who we are as people who bear this name and we are to wear this name Christian well. We are to be humble within it. I think of that passage in Philippians, you know, have this mind in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, although he existed in the form of God, do not count equality with God something to be grasped, but humbled himself. Yes. And that picture of humble, of humility and cultural humility is what I think is so critical.
Boy, that's beautiful. I love that, the point that you made, that this is something thought about and talked about and lived out in the non-Christian realm, and how much more do we need to be living that way as followers of Christ, and be his ambassadors wherever we go, whether it's overseas, whether it's, you know, or right where we live across the street, you know, it doesn't matter. I want to get into something that's of great interest to me, and I think it will be to those tuning in, listening to the podcast as well. You and your husband, you know, you've been, I don't know how long you've been in the United States, but you have more recently made several trips back overseas, specifically to work with refugees, as I understand it. And I know that's, you know, the Syrian refugee crisis. It's, I mean, I can't even fathom it. And you've been up close and personal. You have been on the front lines of talking with and working with and trying to love some of these folks. And I don't think we fully can comprehend what that's like. I would love to have you talk about it. And as you know, because you've been living here in the United States, some of the rhetoric that's been spewed is kind of scary. You know, we don't want these people, or the fear of, and I understand there are legitimate fears of having some bad people enter into the country, but there are wonderful safeguards that are in place. And, you know, how does the Christ follower address this issue? Do we, as I believe Jesus would, have arms of love and compassion open to our refugee friends? But, you know, there's a lot wrapped up in this. So I want to hear you just talk on this, because you've been there. You've been in conversation. You've been working to help so many of these people. So tell us where you've been and some of your thoughts on this, Marilyn, and I'll shut up here.
Thank you. You know, again, I'm so grateful for this opportunity. My desire to work with refugees actually started even before the Syrian crisis, when I had the opportunity to go to Pakistan and work with displaced people. There's a difference between internally displaced people and refugees that isn't always understood. So internally displaced people would be like Iraqis who had to leave Nineveh province and many of them were Chaldean Catholics, Syrian Orthodox. They had to leave to other parts of Iraq. Some of them became refugees because they moved to another country. But there's the displaced people, and then there's the refugees. Both are deeply in need of help and of refuge. So it began in Pakistan with working with internally displaced people.
And let me just interject this question. Why would some of these people have been internally displaced? Some of the reasons.
Excellent question. This is often from conflict, from violence in their particular areas. In the case of Pakistan, it was massive floods that had affected the entire country. The area where I went to was the least served area. And so it was the Sindh province, the southern province. And when I saw my childhood home on the New York Times flooded, there was this deep emotional impact on me. I had always wanted to go and work with displaced people or refugees, but I always thought of this as something I couldn't do. Even though I'm a nurse, nursing comes in different forms. We have different disciplines within nursing, and I always thought of that as an emergency room nurse. You know, an emergency nurse could go right to the crisis and get in there and bind wounds. I'm a public health nurse, but what I realized is right after a crisis, you have massive public health needs because you have people living in close proximity. So you have all those things that create disease. You've got dysentery, you've got scabies, you have malaria, you have malnutrition. All those things that are not emergency, they are public health. And so I was able to go, and the best way to describe that trip was it was full of holy moments. It was just this, the way I verbalized it was this unholy disaster that was full of holy moments. It was these moments of meeting with people, meeting physical needs, exchanging conversations. It was absolutely amazing. And I came back to the United States and I was ruined. I was ruined for my day job. I thought, what do I do with this? You know,
right.
I've got children in college. I can't, this is not like when I first became a nurse. Mm-hmm. I can't just up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I began to just pray and feel just this yearning and longing. In the meantime, what I did was I thought, you know, I want to be able to communicate this. And how do you communicate? Well, as you know, being someone who is so savvy in social media, you use social media. So I began to blog. Ugh. And that's what started. I've always loved to write. And I thought, let me start to blog. At least I can start, whether anyone reads it or not, at least I can begin putting some of these thoughts down on paper.
And let me stop you there and just say that your blog is communicatingacrossboundariesblog.com, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so I'll say it, and it'll be, you know, that's hard to take in while you're listening. So it'll be on the homepage at anitalustria.com. That might be easier. But if you've got your pen handy, it is communicatingacrossboundariesblog.com. All right, go carry on. I just wanted to get that out there.
Right.
So you started to blog and use social media.
That's exactly right. And so my husband just laughs and says, you've always had an opinion on these things. This is just the perfect way.
Nice.
And, you know, it's always so exciting when someone beside your, you know, your mom, who I love dearly, and she is just such a big support. But when someone beside your mom reads it, a stranger reads it, and that actually began happening. But back to the refugee story. My husband had begun doing some trips through a group called Conscience International, and the November, 3 years later, so this was in 2011 that I first, 2010 that I first went. It wasn't until actually 4 years later that I got my next opportunity, 2014. So there were these sort of silent years in between where I thought, you know, what's happening? I have this desire, there's this need, and nothing is happening. But I had a chance to go to Turkey and to work with refugees, first in Istanbul through a migrant program, and later on in a few days later, I went to the southeast part of Turkey near the Syrian and Iraqi borders. If you remember a story on the news, it was August of 2014, and these people were trapped. Iraqis were trapped on the Sinjar Mountains. It was primarily Yazidis. Yazidis are a group of people who they are not Muslim, they're not Christian, their religion borrows from several different areas, Zoroastrianism,
I remember
Islam,
this
and
in the
Judaism.
news.
Right. So they were trapped on these mountains and they could not escape. ISIS had moved into their areas and they basically had this choice: convert, pay a tax, or leave. So they ended up leaving. They had no water, no food. There were journalists who had been working for years and years who were in tears over this. And it was these people that I was able to meet. And it was again these holy moments, these times where you were just met by the resilience of a human spirit. There is nothing like the resilience of the human spirit to show you the image of God in people. This is the image of God. And there is, if there is anything I would want to communicate to people, it's that's what you're doing. You are face to face with someone who bears the stamp of God's image, and they are in need. And what they give you is so much more because you're left. Yes, I'm meeting maybe a physical need. I'm taking a blood pressure. I'm offering ointment. I'm offering advice. That's nothing compared to going away with these stories of strength and resilience that have me absolutely amazed spiritually at who God is.
Let me ask about language. Language barrier, or did you grow up speaking a language that has enabled you to go to these different places?
Definitely a language barrier. I have studied Arabic and I would love to say I know Arabic well, but I don't. I have a much better understanding than I do speaking, which is very common. In Pakistan, it was Urdu and Sindhi, and I had a better grasp of those. But in Iraq, it was Arabic. And of course, there's many different dialects of Arabic. And in Iraq, I found, and in Turkey, with these Iraqi Yazidis who spoke who spoke an Iraqi dialect of Arabic. And the interesting thing is, our translator there was actually he spoke really good Hindi. He was brilliant, and he had taught himself Hindi through watching movies, Bollywood movies. So that was so funny. But he was brilliant at English, Arabic, Hindi, Kurdish, and he had actually been an interpreter with the U.S. Army. At one point, actually, he was just pacing back and forth. And my sister-in-law and I, she was with me, we both looked at him, and Carol, my sister-in-law, said, "Farhan, why are you pacing?" And he said, "This was how we were taught to avoid snipers." So even in, I mean, all the stories just from the stories from an interpreter who paces, and you find out why. And it's because he was an interpreter for the army and had to avoid snipers while he was interpreting. It really boggles your mind.
How long
But
was
yes,
this trip too? I'm curious of the length of time of the trips.
total trip in Turkey was 10 days. The time at this refugee camp was only 3. It was a short time. It was way too short, in fact. The time in Istanbul was longer, But the time at the refugee camp was shorter. And that's the other thing. One of the other things I've learned is that you want these times to be longer because it's relationship building. And it's not always possible. It's not always possible depending on the country you're in. It's not always possible depending on what resources are needed to allow you to function effectively. So, for instance, if it had been an Arabic speaker that did not need a translator, an interpreter at all, that's different than someone that does. So
sure.
There's all these things you learn.
A lot of variables, right, along the way. Yeah. So the Turkey trip, that was not your last trip. You have gone since. And because, I mean, it really sounds like God has laid this on your heart and then opened doors. There was a 4-year gap between going the first time. How much time passed after the Turkey trip?
10 months passed, and I was in Iraq during the summer, hot summer, 120 degrees
in
the Kurdish area of Iraq. And I just fell in love. I fell in love with this area, fell in love with the Kurdish area of Iraq. We were actually staying in a Christian area of Erbil. And in that area, we were hosted by an amazing man and his wife who are Iraqi, and their heart is for refugees. And so we were hosted by them. They are doing work in a couple of different areas in the city and outside the city of Erbil. One of the things that I have found as I've been doing this work is that you meet people on the ground, Christians in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Iraq, in Turkey, and they have taken it upon themselves to the mandate of Christ to reach out to those in need, to, you know, feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to minister to those in need. And they are not afraid. This is amazing, right? The people who are afraid are miles away.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yes. I'm so glad you raised that because, you know, we've got oceans, I mean, a huge ocean between, and some land as well in between. And yet there's this fear. And I think it's often, I won't speculate, but you've named it. You have already named it, that those who are afraid are those who are miles away. And what's that all about? I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I would love for you to speak to some of that and also to how we need to be praying and even opening our hearts and arms here inside our borders.
I am struggling with the fear that I see, really struggling.
Well, and let me just for a second take you back to Iraq where you were and ask you this question, because I know it's on the minds of those listening right now. They're wondering, were you at all afraid when you were there?
I was not afraid. I was not afraid. I will say that before both Pakistan and Iraq, I had these moments right before where I suddenly thought, okay, I need to be ready for everything. And it wasn't fear so much as this sort of awareness, a heightened awareness.
There you go. Like someone living in an inner city that, you know, you just need to pay attention.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's right. So, but I will tell you that I was not afraid. I do feel like my husband and I went together, and we went with the blessing of our church. We went really, we felt very much undergirded by prayer. But as I met these Christians, as I have met these Christians in these places, there's no room for fear.
Yeah.
They're too busy.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, makes sense.
There's not room for fear. And the sadness I feel is that this fear is based on sitting on a couch and watching the news.
Oh, boy.
And that is tremendously concerning to me. I don't think that Wow, where do I even start with this?
Well, I know. Well, I think there's real truth. Now, my travels to the Middle East have been very limited. I've been to Israel, and that's it. But I know going and coming home, my husband and I have talked a lot about this, what's portrayed in the news versus what's happening on the ground certainly appear to be two different things. And how do you combat that? What do you do about that? And how do you change the psyche of a whole nation that is, you know, really given this on the only news outlets that we have to, well, that's not true, not on the only, but on the news outlets we tend to go to?
I think that in terms of affecting the whole psyche, we can't. Mm-hmm. I think it's affecting those who come into our path.
Okay.
I think it's those individual conversations.
Yeah.
I had this wonderful conversation at my church with someone who said, you know, I will be honest, I am afraid, and I pray about my fear. And it's being able to sit down with them, and I struggle with this, not in judgment, mm-hmm. but hear their fears, mm-hmm. and then share stories.
But let me just interject this, though, Marilyn, that person who sat down with you and said, I'm struggling with my fears, that's a far cry different. Yes. to me. That's someone being honest and saying, okay, I realize this is a struggle I have, and I, you know, maybe don't want to remain in this place. That's very different than the person saying, get out, I don't want you to come to this country.
Right. And for that person, I would challenge them. I would challenge them with the gospel message. I would challenge them with the need to look at the facts. I would challenge them to look at their brothers and sisters in Christ in the Middle East who are working not out of fear, but they are basing their decisions on prayer and wisdom. Mm. That is what they are doing. And that is what I believe that's who we must learn from.
I'm also thinking that
I believe that they are absolutely willing to teach us.
Yes. Yeah, and I think I just want to add too, I think that we maybe can have our own struggles with what it means to trust God. Because we live somewhere, and I, you know, this is a broad brushstroke statement. I don't, everyone listening here to this, I don't know their personal circumstances, but in a broad statement, generally in the West, we have, you know, we don't come up close and personal with as many difficult or dangerous circumstances. And so in some ways, I think our trust of God muscle is weak, or can be.
Right. I think that is absolutely true. You know, the first night we were in Iraq, a group, a theater group, put on a play in honor or in memory of a year since they had to leave Mosul. Hmm. Now, this was a group that had to leave with literally the clothes on their back and maybe one bag. Hmm. This was a group of Christians that ended up 24 hours notice. ISIS moved in with their flags. They watched people killed. The iconic story of this one place, Karakosh, is this little girl, 3.5-year-old little girl, Christina, who, as her mother is fleeing with her, ISIS grabs Christina from her arms. So I'm watching this play, and the room is packed. We are given these seats of honor at the front of the room. It was absolutely incredible. But you know what the ending line was? It was, the road may be long and full of our blood, but we will go back waving olive branches. Love is stronger than hate.
Wow.
And I think about this disconnect between reality and rhetoric.
Wow.
And how people are using current events to back fear, to back arguments against receiving refugees. There is not a basis in truth. If we really think about the refugee crisis, it is so much bigger than the terrorist threat.
Well, and I think take it beyond that. If we think at all about the God that we say we believe in, he is so much bigger than all of that.
So much bigger. And I think this is a choice. I think we must choose to walk away from fear. Let's talk about your what you said about your the fear muscle again.
Mm-hmm.
It's connecting that fear muscle with those leg muscles.
Yeah, and there you go.
Mm-hmm. Away from fear. Mm. Fear is a very bad currency.
Yeah.
We cannot live effectively in fear. And this can be around anything. This can be around parenting. It can be around work. It can be about politics. Fear is bad currency.
Well, and it doesn't take you long to think through scripture. And I don't know the numbers, but I certainly know that fear not is said and written a whole lot of times throughout scripture. But it's easy for us to fall into that and not remember that we're called to do just what you said, to walk away from fear.
Exactly. One of my favorite writers and actually a writing friend lives in Djibouti, and her name is Rachel Jones, and she has done this beautiful piece called The Proper Weight of Fear, and it was about her move to Somalia. But she says this, she says, safety is a Western illusion crafted into an idol, and we refuse to bow. Okay. And I think safety is a Western illusion crafted into an idol. And we know what the strong statements against idols and the strong call to not fear, that, as you said, it is laced through scripture. I'm the same as you. I have no idea how many references there are to do not fear, but I know there are hundreds in the scriptures.
Say that quote one more time. I'm reeling still from the quote from your friend Rachel Jones.
Right. So safety is a Western illusion crafted into an idol, and we refused to bow.
Whew. that alone might be a good place to stop today. I can tell, Marilyn, that I'm going to have more than just this one conversation with you, because I feel like we've just scratched the surface here today. And I think what you've said has been so helpful and so important. And it has put a personal face on this issue as well, which I think sometimes is also what we need. And so I'm deeply grateful for your time, your heart, your openness to share some of your experiences. And I think what you've given us today might be all we can chew on right now and think about some of those, especially some of those zingers toward the end of the podcast here today. So I can't thank you enough. I don't know if you have any last minute words or if this is a good place to just draw it to a close.
Well, I just want to thank you. And I guess I reiterate that this is not about comfort. It's not about safety. It's not about freedom from suffering. It's about faith. And so I just want to thank you so much for hearing me and allowing me this voice today.
Well, I just want to remind folks again, Marilyn's book is Between Worlds, Essays on Culture and Belonging, and you can find more at anitalustria.com. You'll find the book there in the right-hand margin on my website, and you can find it linked through so that you can find out more about it. And I'm thrilled that you joined me today. Thanks so much to Marilyn. And yeah, my mind is just kind of spinning here. And so I'm glad we're drawing things to a close. So maybe we can all take a pause and think through some of what Marilyn shared with us today. So I will just end by saying I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.